quality of our criminal justice system, the way in which people that are marginalized, either by poverty or by race, are at a disadvantage. James Kwok's book is called The Fear of Too Much Justice, Race, Poverty, and the Persistence of Inequality in the Criminal Courts. Monday's morning show begins just after 8.
Well, this week on WGTD's Noon Tunes, we're enjoying the music of the Olsen Brothers from Kenosha.
Where the wind blows, doesn't matter, take the high road.
At the end of every WGTD midday newscast, we feature a song by a local artist. So join us for Noon Tunes Monday through Friday, 12:20 p.m. here on WGTD HD.
This is WGTD HD serving Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that explores and highlights various local issues and organizations. It's hosted by Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College, Jenny Tunkies, former reporter for the Kenosha News, and a former chief of staff for the Kenosha County Executive, Marcia Connett, who is a Southeast Regional Consultant for Wisconsin Literacy, and she provides literacy education support and management expertise, and Xander Miller, a librarian at the Kenosha Public Library who also works on technology and digital skills. Community Matters also shares its time slot with the 30-time award-winning WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Good morning and welcome to Community Matters. I'm your host, Marcia Connett, and I am so glad that you're with me today because I have a very special guest, and it is he is Mark Hertzberg. And many of you I know recognize that name from his years at the Journal Times, or maybe from his work with Frank Lloyd Wright Matters, and we're certainly going to touch on those things, but he's a much bigger person than all of that. So, Mark, good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And, it is.
Yeah, we first connected about the sister city,
received
connection with Montélimar, France, and celebrating the 50th anniversary of that relationship about 15 years ago.
I can't believe it was that long ago.
Yeah,
that's Mark and I. We sort of were aware of each other before that, but we had the chance to truly work together when Racine was celebrating its sister city program with Montélimar in France, and there was kind of a big to do. They came here, and it was fun, and we took them to dinner and to a movie, and it was.
And
really,
we went there too. Many of us went there next year.
Yeah, you guys went. I couldn't go. I was so disappointed. But yeah, to go and visit them in their home spot was really wonderful. Sister cities are amazing, and I hope we never lose those connections.
We were told at the time that ours was the second oldest sister city connection in the United States, program that started under Eisenhower's administration.
Really?
Yeah, 1957.
Oh my goodness. Well, that does have a tremendous amount of history. So, well, let's talk a little bit about, we remember you when you were a photographer with the Journal Times, and tell us a little bit about, how'd you get there? Because you're not from around here, I can tell.
I grew up in New York City, and arguably, I took my first news photo. It's arguably when my career started. I was 11 and a half. And President Kennedy, his digs in New York when he was visiting the city were a hotel a few blocks from our apartment. And I read he was going to be in town. And I said, I'm going to take his picture tomorrow morning. And I got up the next morning, had a glass of milk, trundled over to the Hotel Carlisle, and took a picture with my Brownie Star Flash camera. I still have the camera, still have the photo. I tried to pawn the photo off on Time magazine a few weeks later, and
I'm impressed. Yeah. At 11 and a half, that's amazing. And I've seen the picture, and it's really kind of cool.
Yeah. And then I went to Lake Forest College outside Chicago and started there in 68. There were a lot of news photo opportunities, anti-war demonstrations, things like that. A lot of opportunities to ignore my studies and take news photos. And actually, when five of the Chicago Seven were convicted, the little portraits or headshots of three of them in Time magazine the next week were mine. Through a fortunate connection I made at the college, we had a wonderful woman, the late Ellen Mosey, who was head of the public information office at Lake Forest, and she nurtured a lot of us. We had a so-called Mosey Boys reunion a couple years ago, and quite a few of us went on to careers in photography, different aspects of photography.
That is
so amazing. I owe a lot to Ms. M.
No kidding. Well, and those are the kind of people that, you know, give us that boost up, that, you know, push us off
yes.
in the right direction. So then what?
Majored in international relations at Lake Forest, although photojournalism was my passion. And a couple years after graduation, I got hired at the Beloit Daily News. And that was journalism boot camp for me.
Okay.
I was a one-man staff plus a darkroom assistant. And I learned a lot on the fly there. I worked there for 4 years. And then the job opened up in Racine, September 78.
Nice.
And so I was staff photographer here for 7 years. Then I was promoted to director of photography in late 87. And one of the things I enjoyed at the paper, I also had the opportunity to write. I had a column for quite a while, wrote some stories occasionally. And so photojournalism was photography and journalism.
That's perfect. What a perfect environment to be able to walk into and you know, and hone your craft. And how many years at the Journal Times?
33 and a half.
Oh, my yeah. goodness.
I took a buyout at the end of March 2012.
Okay. And what have you been doing since then?
Little bit of this, little bit of that. I've had a second career, if you will, related to Frank Lloyd Wright's work.
Okay.
And I had had commissions to write and photograph three books about his work in Racine while I was at the Journal Times.
Okay.
And a year after I left the Journal Times, I got a commission to write and photograph a book about Penwern, Wright's Fred B. Jones estate, on Delavan Lake, about an hour and a quarter from here.
Oh.
And the other books, my publisher gave me 4 months to finish them. This
that doesn't
book
sound like a long time.
No, but Cindy, my wife, was very understanding. I actually arranged the last book about the research tower, S.C. Johnson Research Tower, that I took unpaid days off, one a week, during those 4 months. But Sue and John Major, who commissioned that book, which was published in 2019 by the Wisconsin Historical Society Press, they said, we're not giving you a deadline. Take as much time as you need to find out as much as you can about Mr. Jones and about Penwern. There was a real dearth of written records. And that ended up taking 5 years to research and write. I mean, I didn't work on it full time. But
sure.
it was a 5-year project. It kept me off the streets.
No kidding.
And about the time that the book came out, in spring of 2019, through a friend, the late Jack Kurtz, a photojournalist, I developed a relationship with an independent news photo agency that's got worldwide clients, Zuma Presswire.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been a contract photographer with them since the spring of 2019. We work two different ways. I occasionally get assignments from them. I was one of the two courtroom pool photographers for most of the Kyle Rittenhouse trial.
I remember
and,
that.
And the rest of what I do, so most of it is not on assignment. I try to anticipate what might be in the news, what people might be interested in. I did a lot of coverage on my own during the fall election, and the Journal Times used some of that. And some of it is more mundane, you might say, but some of, although Zuma is a news photo agency, a lot of people look at them as a stock photo agency.
Well, that's what I was just thinking. Yeah.
Yeah. When I'm on an airplane, I'll take a picture of the airplane parked at the gate next to us or through the terminal window. And occasionally somebody's doing a story about this airline or that airline. They'll use the picture. I've done stuff at the grocery store. There was a dispute over avocado prices some years ago, a tariff thing. And I was at the grocery store. I was buying avocados. I noticed a little sign next to the avocados that said product of Mexico. Out came the iPhone, bingo, and German news agency picked up the photo. Wall Street Journal is a big client. The Guardian, a lot of the sales are abroad. It's not a way to get wealthy. Other agencies have driven down the market regrettably. You know, I'm fortunate that I'm not dependent on this to make a living. And I feel badly for the photographers I know for whom the market's been driven way, way down before I started with it. I was in New York City a few weeks ago visiting my brother for his birthday, and he lives relatively near the headquarters of News Corp, Fox News. So I went, took a few pictures of the Fox signage on the side of the building, and a few days later, the Wall Street Journal used one of them because Fox is in the news. And so, you know, this is how it works.
Well, and I love that that it sort of forces you to pay attention to what's going on, and, you know, and what's hot, and what's, you know, what's everybody's issues now. That's very cool.
It's still in my blood. I can't get the love of news. I loved to read newspapers when I was young. Current events, as they called it, social studies in the day was my favorite class.
Yep.
Other than recess and lunch, probably.
Right. Well, let's backtrack a little bit. How in the world did you ever get interested in the Frank Lloyd Wright stuff?
It's a long, convoluted story. We don't have 5 hours.
No, we don't.
I think the attraction initially was a visual attraction.
Oh.
I had the privilege of taking pictures inside his landmark S.C. Johnson Administration Building early in my career at the Journal Times. I was fascinated by it. Mm. And I devoured Jonathan Lippman's book from the mid-'80s, Frank Lloyd Wright and the Johnson Wax Buildings. And I was just fascinated about the history of it. And I was interested in reading that the company was weeks away from breaking ground on an office building designed by J. Mander Matson, a local architect, who did City Hall in Racine, Mitchell School, a number of other buildings. They weren't happy with it. Interesting story, but they ended up, of course, with Frank Lloyd Wright. And I was intrigued about the building that wasn't built. And Christopher Paulson, executive director of the Racine Heritage Museum, gave me the opportunity to call Edgar Taffel. And Edgar was one of Wright's original Taliesin apprentices.
Yes.
And Edgar was in his 20s when he was assigned to supervise construction of the administration building of Wingspread, part of Falling Water. And I asked Edgar if he knew what the other building looked like, because I couldn't find drawings of the final iteration in the Johnson archives. And Edgar said, I made a drawing of it a few years ago from memory. Do you want it? You want to see a copy of it?
Yeah.
And so I delved into that. Things were different in the newspaper world at the time. And I was given a full page in the paper to write about that.
That's amazing.
I had an assignment at the Journal Times. I gave myself the assignment. There was a big windstorm, and some windows were blown out in the research tower. Mm. And Ron Walter, who was then property, you know, charge of maintenance, property, and so on, took me to a special room underground in the Johnson campus where they had spare right design desks, chairs, and spare tubes for the research tower. And so I got interested in doing a story about what it takes to be a steward of a Frank Lloyd Wright property. I don't like the word owner. And I had the privilege of sitting down with the late Sam Johnson and talking about it. I got a full page in the paper again.
Sure.
And the last piece of the puzzle, again, we circle back to Christopher Paulson, great resource for our community. And the Heritage Museum around the year 2000 was doing an exhibit about Wright's work in Racine. And I think that's why Chris had me call Andrew Taffel. And he asked me to, Chris asked me to photograph the Wright buildings in Racine. And I put together a PowerPoint and I developed a thesis that his built and unbuilt work in Racine represents almost every stage of his career after 1900. Of course, a large exception are the buildings in California and Arizona, but a lot of what he did after 1900 is represented in our backyard.
Boy, and now have you visited all of his?
No, there are too many. But Cindy and I have seen quite a few.
Okay.
And Jim and Angie Slezarek, former co-workers, had given me a Frank Lloyd Wright mouse pad. And I was bored at work one day, staring at the mouse pad, and I noticed it was made by a company called Pomegranate, which used to be a major publisher of Frank Lloyd Wright-related books.
Oh.
And I thought, what the heck? And I wrote them a letter. I sent them the PowerPoint. I said, I think there's a book in this. And they asked for a writing sample and an outline. Outline didn't exist, but I put one together, wrote a sample chapter, and they offered me a contract to do the book. And it, I'm proud to say, went into three printings. And I have to thank Sam Johnson again. I went to meet with Sam, very gracious, wonderful man. And I showed him the PowerPoint and I said, I think there's a book in this. And he said, the world does not need another book about Frank Lloyd Wright. So gulp, pause. He said, but it does need one about his work in Racine. Do what you can to get it published. If you can't find a publisher, come see me. I'm not promising you anything, but there we go. And I treated myself to a Dove ice cream bar on my way out of the Johnson building, on my way back to the JT. And fortunately, Pomegranate gave me a contract. And then that was followed with a book about the Hardy House and one about the research tower.
Okay. Titles of those books are?
Wright in Racine, W-R-I-G-H-T.
Right.
Frank Lloyd Wright's Thomas P. Hardy House. Frank Lloyd Wright's S.C. Johnson Research Tower.
Nice.
Frank Lloyd Wright's Penwern, colon, A Summer Estate.
That's incredible. Are they all still available? Are they all still in print?
Yeah, you could find them in used bookstores. Penwern is still around. S.C. Johnson and Racine Art Museum sell the local books. And they may also have Penwern. But right in Racine, Hardy House, Research Tower, basically print. There is an interesting story quickly about the Hardy House one. One day, Margaret Yagurchian, lovely lady, we became friends. She and her husband, Jim, classical guitarist, studied with Segovia. They were stewards of the Hardy House from 68 to 2012. And one day, early 2000s, she gave me a box and said that she had saved every letter written to the house since they bought it. And there were about 160 letters, and I cataloged them. And they were interesting, the way they were addressed, you know, Frank Lloyd Wright House, Main Street Racine, Thomas Hardy, even 30 years after he had died, you know, things like that.
Oh.
A few were commercial. We want to sell you a plaque because you're on the National Register of Historic Places. A lot of them, we want to see your house, et cetera. And I tried to convince Pomegranate, I thought it'd be interesting to do a book Dear Frank Lloyd Wright House, letters to Frank Lloyd Wright Houses. And I'd gotten permission from many of the letter writers to use their letters. And I never forget the publisher looking at me. We met her on a trip to California vacation. She said, "Who cares?" I was crushed. I later got it done as a magazine article with the Frank Lloyd Wright Foundation. Okay. The book in the end was much stronger. Because the first half of the book is the history, how it came to be. And the second half, I had the privilege of getting to know all six families that had lived in the house or their close, in the case of Mr. Hardy, his two grandchildren.
Oh, that's amazing. And now, for our listeners who don't know, where is the Hardy House located?
1319 Main Street. So it's close to 14th and Main. Mm-hmm. It's the last house at the south end of the block. Mm-hmm. It's on the east
side. Lakeside.
Ann Ritz.
Everybody's noticed it, but I don't think they've ever made the connection.
Five blocks east of S.C. Johnson. Ann Ritz, whose parents were the second stewards of the house, she moved in when she was five, 1938. And there used to be a 14th Street beach nearby.
Uh-huh.
And she says that many people thought that the house was the bathhouse for the beach.
Yeah.
And sometimes they found people in their living room asking where to change into their bathing suits. And Ann and David Archer, who grew up in the house after Ann, contributed greatly to the book because in addition to sharing stories about growing up in it, they shared pictures that they took when they were children growing up in the house. So the second half of the book is the stories of the people who lived in the house and experienced the architecture firsthand.
Oh, wow. That's absolutely amazing. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Community Matters. My guest today is Mark Hertzberg, and we're talking about his years as a photographer, his time, especially in Racine, and then his connection to Frank Lloyd Wright. That is, I can see why you would just be drawn to all of that history and richness. We are so lucky in Racine to have all that.
We are. And, you know, I helped develop a program with SCJ and Unified for fifth or sixth graders to go to SC Johnson, see the great workroom, and see an AV presentation about his work.
Oh.
I grew up in New York City, and my parents didn't take us to the Empire State Building, the UN, or the Statue of Liberty. The stuff is there. It fell to a family friend when I was 10 or 11. And so I got a sense that it was the same for people who grow up in Racine.
Absolutely.
And the day we piloted the program, a teacher I knew who was in the pilot class told me that a student of his said, "I walk past this building, the administration building, every day on my way to school. I never knew what it was until today." And I thought if we get one architect out of this, it's a success.
Oh.
And some years later, I got a call from a teacher at Roosevelt Elementary School. She said, "I've got to tell you, I had this student whose attitude was, I don't want to go on another damn field trip. You know, field trips are boring." And she came back as a fifth grader and said, "I want to be an architect." And she went to UWM in architecture. And I later saw, this takes it to an extreme, she put a tattoo of a Hardy House window on her upper arm.
Oh, that is fabulous. Yeah. Well,
Before we leave Wright, I just want to mention two things. I do have a website. I don't update it often. WrightInRacine.com. I go in spurts with it. But I anticipate in a few weeks doing something because Christopher Paulson, again, Chris, is bringing a wonderful exhibit to the Racine Heritage Museum. And this is being done with Tim Samuelson. Tim Samuelson is the fabled City of Chicago cultural historian emeritus. He was the cultural historian for years. He has got the most incredible collection of Louis Sullivan, Frank Lloyd Wright, other artifacts. And he had a wonderful exhibit in Elmhurst, Illinois, a few years ago, about Frank L. Wright before the Lloyd. Wright was born Frank Lincoln Wright, changed the middle name to Lloyd during his career. And Tim, who helped with the Ian Ellie show at the museum a few years ago, and the Popeil Vegematic and Pocket Fisherman show, that was all out of Tim's collection.
Oh, nice.
Bringing the Elmhurst show here, reimagined with an emphasis on the relationship between Cecil Corwin and Frank Lloyd Wright. Cecil Corwin was Wright's great friend when Wright came to Chicago, and they shared office space together. Cecil Corwin is the architect of the Mitchell House in 9th and Main. Frank Lloyd Wright helped him with it. And Corwin's father, Reverend Eli Corwin, was pastor of the First Presbyterian Church in the late 1800s.
Right there, sure.
And Corwin and Wright were very close. Wright, excuse me, writes about him very fondly in his autobiography. It's possible that they had a personal relationship. And Wright's first commission in Racine was not the Hardy House in 1904. It's a relatively unknown one, and I got to do a big story for the Journal Times about this as well. In 1899, Herbert and Flora Miles had a home on Washington Avenue, somewhat across from where Lee's Deli is now. It's in the backyard of where Rehnquist Design had their studio, the Tudor-style house.
Sure.
And in 1899, they asked Corwin to remodel the house for them because they'd had a baby. And we have a drawing from Corwin that looks like a miniature Mitchell house tacked onto the back of the existing cottage. That house, the original Miles house, was torn down in the late 50s, but we have a photo of what it looked like. So Corwin tacks a little Mitchell house onto the back of what was called the cottage. And by 1901, the commission had passed to Wright. It was never realized. It worked, but we have a letter. It's in the McCormick Library Special Collections at Northwestern. There's a letter from Frank Lloyd Wright to the client and some drawings that he did. And if there's any doubt that it was from Frank Lloyd Wright, beside the fact that he signed the letter and his name is on the return address, you know that Wright had a reputation for not always paying his bills, stiffing people. Mm-hmm. And the letter arrived at the client's house with postage due. And so we have the envelope along with the letter.
Better than
in that collection at Northwestern. So
that's amazing. That is absolutely fabulous. Well, you've certainly put Racine on the map, if you will, with a lot of the things that you've written, and we are certainly better for it. But you, when I think of you now, I think of you on your bike. You ride your bike a lot of places and do a lot of things on your bike, do you not?
I do.
You do?
And I thank my wife Cindy for that. There used to be a fitness challenge run by Ray Mack.
I remember. Yes.
She was an educator at Walden. They were in it. The JT was in the fitness challenge. And she said to me one day, "You're going to do the fitness challenge this year." I said, "No, I'm not." "Yes, you are." "No, I'm not." "Yes, you are." "No, I'm not." "Look, all you got to do is ride your bike." And our oldest son, Adam, had given me a little computer for my bike. It registers your mileage. And I became obsessed when it turned 1,000 miles. And I started setting mileage goals. And I try to ride every day. And actually, the reason I asked you to move the interview up by an hour to what you originally proposed was the weather forecast, because the wind is going to die down by 4. So I'll have a better ride in today.
So do you ride year-round?
I do.
Do you have snow tires?
I have studded tires on my commuter bike. I have a bike that I try to ride when I'm running errands, going to the coffee shop to work, or sometimes to the grocery store, meeting people for lunch, whatever. I try to minimize driving. Mm-hmm. And other than that, I have what's called a road bike. It used to be called a 10-speed, the curved handlebars.
Sure, sure.
It's a lot lighter than the commuter bike, but I save it for good weather and fun riding. And, Cindy and, what... and I have a tandem. We haven't used it in a few years since she got a new bike, but we did 2-week-long supported rides in Canada and 3 in Wisconsin.
That's incredible. We used to rent tandem bikes from the old bike shop on Main Street. Remember?
Sure, Racine Cycler. Yeah.
Right, and oh my gosh, we would have so much fun. It's nice to know that they still exist and they're out there.
Yeah.
So what's your commuter bike? What kind of bike is it if it's not a 10 speed?
It's a straight handlebar bike. I sit much more upright.
Okay.
And the key things, and our son Adam suggested this to me when I left the JT, because I had sort of trashed mountain style bikes, winter bikes, with the rust from the road salt.
Oh, sure.
And this bike, and it's actually my second one because I wore one out after 10 years, still got some rust, but it's got a carbon belt instead of a metal chain. So that's not going to rust in the winter. And it's got what they call an internal hub. There's no derailleur. The gears mm-hmm. are housed internally.
Nice.
And so it's an upright bike, and it's got those two features. It's also got nice built-in headlight, taillight.
Ooh, nice.
And I urge everybody, wear a helmet, no matter how short the ride. That's very important. I once fell, cracked my helmet in 5 places. So if I hadn't had a helmet, we wouldn't be doing this interview.
Oh my gosh.
And I also urge people flashing front and rear lights, even in the daytime. They help a lot. And also I've got basically no vision in my right eye. So I have a rear view mirror on my helmet. And I also figure I wouldn't drive a car without a rear view mirror. Why should I drive a bike without one? And especially with people texting and so on. And I haven't put it on the bike yet. I've got to do it waiting for the spring maintenance. But one of our sons gave me a new bike computer with a taillight that's supposed to send a radar signal when somebody's creeping up on me and alert the computer on the handlebars. So,
oh, my, like the new cars have. Oh, that is so cool. My gosh, that could be a lifesaver, literally.
Yeah.
So
the technology. And I've got to give a plug to Trek Bicycle Racine on Durand. I used to have direct deposit of my paycheck at Racine Cyclery. And people at the Trek shop are wonderful. And if you buy a bike, you need to be fitted to it properly. It'll enhance your enjoyment. You may pay a little more for name brand bike, but it's worth it in the long run.
Oh, it certainly sounds like it. Now, you mentioned that you and Cindy have done some biking in your travels, and you do some incredible traveling. And we've only got about 10 minutes left in the show, but can you talk a little bit? I know you just came back from an incredible trip. I've been following your pictures, and oh my goodness. Can you talk a little bit about the traveling that you do?
Was that the trip I made to Kenosha a few weeks ago? right before. We went
to
Colombia. Yeah,
the Colombia. South American trip, yes.
We did our first trip with Rhodes Scholar, used to be Elder Hostel, in 2015. We went to Machu Picchu and the Galapagos Islands.
Oh.
And we really enjoyed traveling with Rhodes Scholar. We've been since then. We've done Cuba, Vietnam, Cambodia, New Zealand and Australia back to back, Chile, Argentina, Japan, and we did Malta and Morocco back to back, and then Portugal on our own. We landed at O'Hare, March 12th, 2020, the day the world shut down.
Yes.
And Rhodes Scholar has literally thousands of trips, rhodesscholar.org, and they have several Frank Lloyd Wright ones, and they have a week-long architectural masterpieces of Frank Lloyd Wright that starts in Chicago Oak Park and then comes through Racine, Milwaukee, Madison.
Really?
And education is a big part of their trips. They have what they call expert lecturers. And I join the Frank Lloyd Wright one when they get to Racine, and I'm with them then for 3 days as we experience Racine. We stay overnight here. Then we go to Milwaukee the next day, overnight in Middleton for 2 nights. We ended up at Taliesin.
Oh.
And so I meet guests from around the world. I've done 13 of those with them. And
that is, I had no idea that they were coming through here. And won't it be exciting that they could maybe stay at the new hotel in the Zahn's building?
Oh, I mean, that would be wonderful. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be a neat connection?
Right. Right now we're staying at the DoubleTree. The one on the corner
the
house.
Lake.
I've got to reorder. Yeah.
I know.
On the lakefront.
Exactly. But yes, corner house is there now too, which I still can't wrap my head around. Yeah. But it's wonderful. Yeah. So what? I won't ask you what your favorite trip has been, because that's not a fair question. Let's talk a little bit about your trip to Colombia and some of the what were your takeaways? What were the things that moved you the most about that?
It was especially fun because Cindy taught Latin American social studies at Walden for 20 years. And so finally she gets to experience Chile, Argentina, Machu Picchu,
yes,
Galapagos in Colombia, and it's a very diverse country. The topography is fascinating. The Andes Mountains. We started in Bogota, which is elevation of 8,000 feet. We went Manizales, Medellin, which has had an incredible rebirth from the narco days. 10 years ago or so, they were named the most innovative city in the world. We ended up in Cartagena, which has got a wonderful Caribbean, Afro-Caribbean flair to it.
Nice.
Unfortunately, there's quite a sad slave history to Colombia.
Oh.
Slaves from Africa.
I didn't realize
and so,
that.
Yeah. Oh. So the Spaniards not only overtook indigenous populations throughout Latin America, but they also imported many slaves from Africa.
Sure, sure.
So, yeah.
Very much like our own history.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's amazing. I think one of the things that struck me about the pictures that I saw were these incredibly colorful images. Was it really that colorful in
those It places? Is. And I also left that in December. We went to Oaxaca and Puebla. And Oaxaca is an incredibly colorful city. The colors of the colonial architecture are just stunning. And I enjoy travel photography.
Clearly, yeah.
You know, I combine the love of photography, the love of photographing people, the love of travel. And yes, the colors, I mean, that's there. And some people take notes. There was a guest on our trip who makes sketches, and then she was going to do watercolors when she got home. And I do a book from each of our trips.
Really?
Computer-generated book. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's fun sifting through the pictures, and I throw out at least half of what I took. And
we all do.
Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing. And you throw it half and still you post hundreds. It's absolutely amazing. Now, tell me, you mentioned before, sometimes you just have your phone as a camera. What kind of cameras are you using on trips like this?
Okay. And I'd say the most important thing, sometimes people ask me what brand camera. And what matters is your eye. Nikon cameras because I'm locked into their lens system. And I don't want to get rid of the lenses and have to buy all new with another manufacturer.
Sure.
And for people photo-oriented, I use a crop sensor camera. I have a crop sensor in full frame. I just take the one crop sensor camera, Nikon D500. And it's a computer with a lens in front of it. And I only take one lens with me. I have a very compact 18 to 300 millimeter lens that Nikon makes. It does not allow pictures in very low light as easily as the lenses I usually use. But the capability of these cameras has increased, that you can take pictures in much lower light, much faster film speeds, ISO. You can really boost it like we never could in the film days.
Sure.
And I also use, I have an iPhone 14 Pro that is extraordinary in low light. Sometimes I use it instead of the camera.
Really?
Because it's so good in low light situations, night. Yeah.
That's really good to hear. You know, for those of us who mostly only have our phones these days, to know.
I had an 11 Pro, which was very, very good also. But the 14 Pro is just that much better for my purposes.
That's amazing.
And, you know, the capability of the phone, I was cycling the weekend before the Biden-Trump election. Mm-hmm. And I stopped to take pictures of a Biden rally I saw downtown, sent the pictures into the agency, and I ended up with a full-page picture in Time magazine. And that was off a phone photo.
Oh,
with
my
the
God.
Old phone.
Well, that makes me feel
so
better.
The capability's there.
Do you do anything to your phone pictures before you send them out? Or you just, that's how they
do it? Or the regular ones. We had a photo ethics code at the paper. I do not like the computer work that a lot of people do to their pictures. I believe in authenticity. Frankly, sometimes the colors in outdoor phone pictures are too vibrant and unrealistic for me. So I crop my photos. I sometimes open up the midtones a little bit, but that's basically cropping photos.
That's really good to hear. That is really good to hear. Well, you have done some incredible stuff. If you had to pick your favorite place in our last couple minutes, what was your favorite place to visit?
They're all wonderful. I asked somebody that on our trip, and the person said, you know, it's like being asked to pick your favorite child.
Yeah.
And none of the trips have been a disappointment.
Oh, that's wonderful.
They've all been special.
Yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. And I mean, the world is big. There's still lots of places left to go. What's next on your bucket list? Do you have somewhere?
We're going to Yosemite later on in the spring.
Ooh.
Cindy's wanted to go there for many years. I'd like to go to Iceland. Moscow and St. Petersburg are off the list, unfortunately.
Fortunately, yes. Yeah, me too.
You know, Iceland, Scotland, I don't know, lots of places.
Yeah, I've still got a long list that includes Greece and, you know, and the Galapagos is on my list.
Yes,
I've had family go another, and just rave.
Istanbul and the Greek islands is another one. And there's quite a bit out there.
Goodness. Yeah, we could go on and on, couldn't we?
The Rhodes Scholar catalog is thick.
Well, and that's good to know. And just roguescholar.com would
be roadscholar.org.
Mm-hmm. .org, R-O-A-D. Of course.
Yeah.
Well, Mark, this has been
a privilege. Thank you.
Thank you. It has just been a joy. I know our listeners will enjoy hearing it and rehearing it. You've been a delightful guest, and I can't thank you enough.
Well, thank you for your questions and your interest.
Well, thanks. And thanks to all of you who've joined us today on Community Matters. I'm Marcia Conant. We'll be back again next month, but our colleagues will be here every Saturday. And you are listening to WGTD-HD.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click Shows. This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.